page 52. Rajarshinam Janayita. Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Nigrahita Kaliresha.
Nigrahita Kaliresha.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Please chant.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Shasta Chotpata Gaminam. Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Shasta Chotpada Gaminam.
Shasta Chotpada Gaminam.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Bhuvo Dharmasya Karanat.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Shasha Chotpata Gaminam. Nigrahita Kaleresha. Bhuva Dharmasya Karanat.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Shasha
Chotpata Gaminam.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Uvo Dharmasya Karana.
Rajarshinam Janayita.
Rajarshinam Janayita. Shasta Chotpata Gaminam.
Nigrahita Kaleresha.
Uvo Dharmasya Karana. Uvo Dharmasya Karana. Rajarishinam. Of kings as good as sages. Janayita, producer. Shasta, chastiser. Cha, and Utpatagaminam, of the upstarts. Nigrahita, molester. Kalehe, of the quarrelsome. Esha, this. Bhuvaha, of the world. Dharmasya, of religion. Karanat, on account of. Translation. And this is being spoken by the learned Brahmins. They're panegyrists, and they're glorifying the child within the womb before he appears, telling about his wonderful qualities. And if you're ever going through customs and they ask you to fill out on your form what your occupation is, you can put panegyrist. Rajarishinam, of kings as good as sages. Janayita, producer. Shasta, chastiser. Cha, and Utpatagaminam, of the upstarts. Nigrahita, molester. Kalehe, of the quarrelsome. Esha, this, Bhuvaha, of the world. Dharmasya, of religion. Karanat, on account of. Translation. This child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for the sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of the upstarts and the quarrelsome. Please repeat. This child will be the father of kings. Who will be like sages,
be like sages.
For world peace,
for world peace.
And for the sake of religion,
and for the sake of religion.
He will be the chastiser of the upstarts,
he will be the chastiser of the upstarts.
And the quarrelsome.
And the quarrelsome.
Purport. The wisest man in the world is a devotee of the Lord. The sages are called wise men, and there are different types of wise men for different branches of knowledge. Unless, therefore, the king or the head of the state is the wisest man, he cannot control all types of wise men in the state. In the line of royal succession in the family of Maharaj Yudhishthira, all the kings, without exception, were the wisest men of their times. And so also it is foretold about Maharaj Parikshit and his son, Maharaj Janamejaya, who is yet to be born. Such wise kings can become chastisers of upstarts and uprooters of Kali, or quarrelsome elements. As will be clear in the chapters ahead, Maharaj Parikshit wanted to kill the personified Kali, who is attempting to kill a cow, the emblem of peace and religion. The symptoms of Kali are 1. Wine, 2. Women, 3. Gambling, and 4. Slaughterhouses. Wise rulers of all states should take lessons from Maharaj Parikshit in how to maintain peace and morality by subduing the upstarts and quarrelsome people who indulge in wine, illicit connection with women, gambling, and meat eating supplied by regularly maintained slaughterhouses. In the age of Kali, regular license is issued for maintaining all of these different departments of quarrel. So how can they expect peace and morality in the state? The state fathers, therefore, must follow the principles of becoming wiser by devotion to the Lord, by chastising the breaker of discipline, and by uprooting the symptoms of quarrel, as mentioned above. If we want blazing fire, we must use dry fuel. Blazing fire and moist fuel go ill together. Peace and morality can prosper only by the principles of Maharaj Parikshit and his followers. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milatandina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dirati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Kalpatrubhyascha Krupasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shvasari Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Marama Hare Hare Rajarshinam Janayita Shashtachot Patagaminam Nigrahita Kaleresha Bhuvo Dharma Sikaranat. This child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for the sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of the upstarts and the quarrelsome. And the wisest man in the world is the devotee of the Lord. Krishna talks about this also in the Bhagavad Gita, about the learned person. He says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. The person who sees with equality, the vision of equality, the learned Brahman, the outcast, the dog, the elephant, all these people, he sees the same soul within the body. And Krishna says also in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayo gyanam yatach gyanam atambama. This is knowledge. Knowledge means to understand the difference between the body and the self. and that there's it's a field, and that there's a knower of the field, that we're a conscious entity. And then to that vision expands outwardly. Vidivinaya sampane, sampane, seeing equally all kinds of living entities, conscious living beings, no matter what kind of body they're in. He understands that they are spiritual. He understands the predicament of the dog, but he knows that it's a spirit soul, and it's part and parcel of Krishna. So this, Krishna says, is a pundit, as a learned person. And in the Bhagavatam, fifth canto, it is said, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinchana sarvarganas tatra samasite sura harava bhaktasu kutom mahadguna manoratenasati dhavato bahi. That a person who is engaged in devotional service will necessarily, because of contact with the supreme pure, develop all good qualities. The qualities of the suras, the beings full of light, the demigods, will come out of such a person by contact with Krishna through devotional service. Prabhu Vishnave Namaha, because of the power of Lord Vishnu, all this is possible. Whereas those who don't have contact with Krishna, they are, even though seemingly materially qualified, harava bhaktasya, they don't have bhakti. Harava bhaktasu kuto mahadguna mano retainasati. Their qualities are seasonal. They are compared here poetically to a rath or a car. And they're going around and around. Mano retainasati davato bihi. Eventually, they'll go off again in another direction. They'll come and go. And therefore, they're temporary. So a learned person is actually someone who's come to the conclusion of bhakti. Sarvasya cha hamridi sanivishto matak smritir gyanam apoanam cha. Vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. To understand that Krishna is the source of the Vedas, that he's the object to be known through the Vedas. Somebody who's come to this conclusion and therefore is engaging in devotional service, that person is actually learned and is the wisest person in the world, because they've figured out what is the cause of the world, and they know how to help themselves and they know how to help others. Another definition given of a wise person, which is not well known in especially Western society, given by Chanakya Pandit, a wise person is someone who sees all the other women except for his wife as mother. Someone who sees all others' property except for his own as garbage in the street. In other words, he wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot barge pole. He treats others equally, knowing that the golden rule, that I treat others the way I want to be treated myself. Is that all four? Is there another one? Yeah. So this is the definition of a learned person, who has this kind of vision. Even if one is academically not accomplished, if someone has these qualities and this kind of vision, knowing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that person is the wisest person within the world. In a similar context, there has been historically a division between the smarta Brahmins and the devotees. You can read about this in the book about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There was a great fight because the Jata Gosai, those who believed that they were Goswamis because of their birth, were very puffed up in thinking that they had a monopoly on devotional service. And they would do things like charge to get in the temple and for other kinds of services. And in other words, they were making a living out of it and a good living too. And you see this, at least I've seen it in many countries around the world. For instance, in Japan, there's a stranglehold on all the religious ceremonies by the Buddhist priest. You have to go through them to, for instance, have a funeral ceremony, which is very important in Japan because the spirit of your relatives is dependent upon it, and it's very expensive. and the priests are very rich. And this can be the case sometimes, that, and it was the case with the Jetta Gosai, that they had sort of cornered the market and had a cushy job because everyone had to go through them according to their birthright. Of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, bringing in the light of Shastra, argued with them successfully and won in many debates in open assembly. Of course, they didn't give in very easily. They fought because it was their livelihood. They fought, sometimes violently. We read last night about how when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took a parikram party to Navadvip, because of what he represented and what he was talking about, which was to speak against this idea of having a high position devotionally because of your birth, these people organized an attack against Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and all of his devotees who were on pilgrimage. They had set up to have a pandal, and they were having Krishna Katha, and people, they had an elephant, and Radha Govinda, the deities, were riding on the elephant and everything, and these dacoits came out and began attacking them with sticks and even attacking the elephant. And then they backed off for a little bit. The devotees brought the deities off of the elephant, and then thinking that, of course, they wouldn't attack if they saw that the deity was there, but they came rushing back in again with sticks. And then a signal was given, and there were bricks being thrown from the rooftops. The pilgrims were gashed, and some bones were broken. Nobody was killed, but some were knocked out. And the locals there would not let them into the homes, many of them, because if they did, then they would be persecuted also. This had become the state of affairs in Navadvip and other places. Those who had taken this birthright idea about advanced position in devotional service just by birth. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati spoke out strongly against this principle because it's not in Shastra. One becomes qualified by one's performance of devotional service and one's quality of pure devotion. Prahlad Maharaj talks about this in his prayers to Lord Nrsimhadev, saying that a Brahmin with all the brahminical qualifications, even if such a person is not a devotee and is averse to devotional service of the Lord, that person can't purify even himself, what to speak of others. But a person, even if he's a dog eater, a shvapacha, if he is a devotee, then he can not only purify himself, but also his family and many others. And there are ample citations we can give from Shastra which show that by the touch of pure devotional service and through the pantratric system of purification, that is, taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and engaging in devotional service under those rules and regulations, one can become elevated very quickly to the position of devotional service and is then respected according to Shastra as a pure Vaishnav. My point is that over time, because the material world has an enervating condition, that is, no matter what we do, if we don't maintain, it will be dragged down, it will be dissembled. If you leave your house and you don't leave somebody in it for several weeks, when you come back, you'll be surprised to see that it's falling apart, just of its own accord. You don't have to even let loose, you know, any animals inside or invite vandals to come in. Just of its own accord, here, there, and everywhere, it will begin to fall apart. Water seeps in for some reason when you're not there, or, you know, insects come and dust, everything develops. If you leave something, if you leave a machine for some time, it just won't work anymore. That's what was happening during the Gulf War. One of the strategies of the, whatever they were called, the Americans and whoever they were fighting with, they were bombing over and over again just to keep them, the so-called enemy pinned down so that they couldn't use their tanks. Because if they left their tanks sitting for enough time over a certain number of weeks, they couldn't use them anymore because they just fall apart. And Krishna talks about how the principles of religion and the laws of morality, they degrade over time because of the enervating condition of the material world, and they become degraded. And therefore, leadership means, as is being pointed out here, that there must be someone to bring things back to the center, to the shastra, to scripture. And this is how a government is supposed to be run. And that's the duty of a king. Because people are generally ignorant. And they want to act according to the dictates of the senses. And when they do that, there's no hope for them. They become degraded and dragged down by the laws of material nature. And so we need a strong leader to help us to stay on track. Everyone wants to go back to sleep, hit the alarm, and just, you know, pack it in, and we'll try it another day. But when we have the rules and regulations of the scripture, and when we have a spiritual master saying, no, you have to do it like this, then gradually we can elevate ourselves to a higher position. And in society, if there aren't divisions in which people can work peacefully and pursue the spiritual aim in life, and there isn't some kind of justice being meted out to keep people focused on the goal of life, then everyone will degrade. So it was very important for these Brahmins in this society, and it's a glorious occasion that Parikshit Maharaj is being born and that he will be such a king to maintain the principles of religion, and that his descendant, Janamejaya, will also be of such quality. And this is of utmost importance for society. And we find throughout the Bhagavatam, especially in the ninth canto, when you go through, you'll find out the lineage of kings leading all the way up to the appearance of Lord Krishna in the tenth canto of the Bhagavatam. And then after that, when you come to the twelfth canto, you find what happened. How did Kali Yuga actually get a stronghold? The kings became corrupted. Gradually, more and more kings who were not qualified, who didn't know the principles of Shastra, who weren't willing to administer them, came into power. And because of that, the whole system fell apart and the whole society fell apart. And there, that's where we are today. Where are we today? Well, we don't have strong leaders, I'll tell you that much. I saw something about Donald Trump running for president and people criticizing him because he lied about some construction project he had. He said he sold all the buildings and they were disputing, no, you only sold 80% of it. And then he did some double talk, said, no, but I didn't actually intend to sell those. The point was just that then people were criticizing him, saying, no, how could he be president? It seems like he lied here. This might not look well on his resume for a president. But the whole lot of them are not of very high quality. But the point is, people want high quality. They're actually looking for that. They're looking for morality. They're looking for strong leadership. They're looking for somebody who's actually chaste to God. Even though we live in a secular society, and a lot of people would argue with that and say, you know, that's exactly what we don't want. But that's because of so many people who have been corrupt in the name of religion also. But that's what people really want. They want strong leadership. They want somebody to show them exactly how to become happy in life. And what Srila Prabhupada is saying in the purport here, that's only possible if someone is adhering to the Shastra and taking the instruction of Krishna. Yeme mitam idam nityam anutishtanti manava. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, what is it, 20th verse? I think, 320. Yeh me matam idam nityan anutishanti manava. He says that, here, this is my opinion. Yeme matam idam nitam. These are my principles. And if you follow them without envy, then you'll have success. And if you don't, you'll go to hell. It's really simple. When Lord Ramachandra was in charge of his kingdom, then there was, people felt satisfied. They felt satisfied because they knew what to do. And there was somebody to cut down the unwanted elements also and keep things in order. So in the Kali Yuga, we don't have that. However, we should have it in our own life. We can arrange our individual life so that it's lined up with Shastra, so that we're following Krishna's instruction, and that we should also have a strong sense of our leadership. Who's leading us? How am I being led? Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. We should be firmly situated in those, because there are many ways in which to turn in this world, left, right, up and down. We have to make decisions all the time, and we should base those strongly on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, so that we can move forward in lockstep with the Lord's desire. We should know that. Yeme matam midam nityam anutishanti manava. 30. No? 31. Shatavanto nasuyanto muchante te pikarmabi. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Next verse. Ye tve tad abhyasuyanto nanutishtanti me matam sarva jnani vimunams tan vidinashtam achetasaha. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. That's pretty clear. And it's reassuring. It's actually, this is what we want. This is what we need as living entities, is actual direction coming from above. And when you have that, then you actually have freedom. And Krishna talks about this in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. If you follow the regulated principles of freedom, how does that verse start? Next verse is Prashadi Sarva Dukkhan. I'm just back up one. He says that, pardon me? Raga dvesho vimuktaistu vishan indriyaisharan atma vashar vedeyatma prasadam arigachati. So that means that atma vashar vedeyatma, if you actually follow these rules and regulations that Krishna is giving, then you get some prasad. You get some mercy. You get some freedom in this world. They're regulated principles of freedom. The more you align yourself with Krishna's laws and his instructions and his representatives, then the more you actually become free and the more you become intelligent, you're an intelligent person. Otherwise, Krishna says categorically, you're a mudha. You're an ass. You're just an ass working hard for nothing, and you're being directed by the material nature, or you're vimudha, you're really an ass. And so we don't want to be asses. We want to actually become spiritually glorious. And the way to do that is through aligning oneself with Krishna. And so this is this section of the Bhagavatam where the sages, from the heart, they're glorifying the appearance of Maharaj Parikshit and telling of what his qualities will be. And they're very happy because they know that this is their connection with the Supreme, and that they'll be protected because of the king, who's actually a representative of the Supreme Personality of God, Raja Rishi. Rishi means somebody who's fixed in a spiritual knowledge and discipline, and they're a Raj at the same time. What a wonderful combination to have a king like that, a Raja Rishi. You know, someone that stands and cuts down the bad elements. So I was saying, moving that over to our own individual life, our intelligence should become a Raja Rishi. Our own intelligence within our mind, within ourself. The mind has to be controlled by the intelligence. And Krishna talks about this in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, Indriyani prayanyahur indriyabhya paramanaha manasastu parabhudhir yovude paratastu saha. That the soul is situated at the top of the hierarchy, of course above the soul is the super soul, but lowest of all are the sense objects, above that are the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, above the intelligence is the soul. So we evam buddhi param buddhva samstabhyatmanamatmana jahishatra mahabaho kama rupa darasadam. Our enemy, according to the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, lust. Lust means the tendency to use everything for ourselves. It's like the hand trying to eat the food. And it's a mistake. It's grotesque, actually. It's stupid. It's stupidity. It's mudha. But we have to, through superior intelligence, through guidance of Shastra, learn how to actually feed the stomach, how to feed Krishna. When you feed Krishna, when you serve Krishna, that's love, actually. Sacrifice for the center, sacrifice for our source, sacrifice for the Supreme Personality of God, who is the source of everything, that's actually love. And the more we give, the more we grow. The more we learn that Krishna is present in acts of sacrifice, and we become satisfied more and more by his presence, by his association, then the more we want to sacrifice. That's healthy. Because he's such a center that the more we feed him, the more we're fed. And when we know that we know the secret to life. And that's what the most intelligent people in the world know. And those are devotees. They know how to feed the center. So we have to have our intelligence fixed on this, that where do I get my sustenance? My sustenance comes from Krishna. And therefore, my intelligence is directed towards satisfying Krishna. And acharya upasanam, how do we do that? Through the chain of command. You have to satisfy the acharya. You have to have a guru and you have to satisfy the guru. Otherwise, that's the system Krishna has set up. And he doesn't take directly. So this is to fix the intelligence through self-surrender and through taking guru sadhu shastra. Then we become properly aligned. And then living in the city of nine gates, we may not have a president or a king in the society that instills in us or anybody else much confidence. But we can have a king within our own body of nine, the city of nine gates, that instills confidence. When the mind actually becomes subservient to the spiritual intelligence guided by Shastra, we become confident and we feel protected. And the mind, as Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, becomes the best friend. Otherwise, it's the worst enemy. It's like, the cage is open and, you're in prison 20 years and cage doors, and they say, go ahead free, and you say, eh. Or they put you in the ring with some boxing gloves, and you have boxing, and you're punching yourself over and over again. Go a few more rounds. Ding, you want to go again? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. So over and over again, this is the intelligence of material life. But a spiritually intelligent person doesn't inflict this damage and this create havoc for the world. And certainly for him or herself, because the intelligence is trained on Krishna, who's our benefactor and who's the source of all good fortune for everybody. So we should also meditate on this verse of the glory of the appearance of Maharaj Parikshit, those glory days. And it's not that they're finished. Krishna always has a way to follow the authority. It's not like he leaves us in darkness. It doesn't matter. In the Kali Yuga, we can still find that. Through our sincerity, we can find our authority and how to follow that. And when we're fixed in that, then we can move in the world without damaging ourselves, without creating havoc for others, without being a source of trouble for others, without being violent to other people. we follow the authority properly. We become properly aligned. So we should align ourselves with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. We should make the city of nine gates a fortified place by following those authorities correctly and very strictly in this life. And then we'll become an asset to the whole world. We'll be able to help ourselves, and we'll be able to help others. And if you can't help yourself, you can't help anybody else. Satyadeva Prabhu told me in paramedic school, the first day they taught him, a dead paramedic cannot help anybody. Therefore, the first rule is you have to save yourself. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna. Comments, questions, or reflections? Comment and reflection, pretty much the same. Yes, Bhakti George. Oh, use the microphone. We're on Mayapur TV.
Hi, Krishna. When I arrived, I was listening in the middle unit, some of the discussion. And just something that I was thinking about a lot this week was destiny and how a lot of things are put into motion because of our past deeds, because of our past karma. But devotional service is outside this destiny. It's almost like going against the tide. And that's why it seems difficult sometimes. I think for some people, we feel like maybe it's so easy to just go with the tide and just go with a flow of things and just see where it just takes you. It's what most people do. And there's a famous saying that's the path of least resistance leads to crooked rivers and crooked men. But when we do devotional service, like, you know, sometimes waking up early or like telling our mind, hey, we have to control the mind. We have to, you know, think pure thoughts, and we have to try to do devotional service. Sometimes it feels like it can be difficult because it's like we're going against the tide, but we're trying to make a difference. That's just something I was thinking about.
Nice. Nice realization. Thank you for sharing. Rakshit? Or did you have your hand first? It was a tie over there, and then we'll come back to Rakshit.
Sorry, Prabhuji, just quick question that Akrunath Prabhu was asking before about how the chicks are, the beaks are cut and the slaughter is going on in a high volume. But how is our, whatever Sankirtan we do, it says like it benefits the whole world or where the devotee lives. So how is that working? Because are we not in a left position to understand? Because it says that Krishna consciousness is a topmost welfare activity. So is that aimed towards saving all the living entities and all that? Or what should be our focus? First of all, how does it work and what should be our focus in doing?
Krishna is the deliverer. He's Mukunda. We don't deliver. We just deliver Krishna. And Krishna does his work. He delivers. And so we should deliver Mukunda for others, knowing that he's the one who helps everyone. It's a valid question. It's a very important question that you're asking. It's what most great sages ask. That's what's being asked at the gathering at Naimi Saranya, which is how do we do good for everybody? That's what they want to know, really. They're trying to figure it out, how to do good for the masses of people, because they're really suffering and it's going to get worse. Kali Yuga is coming, so they ask that question. Also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is asking Haridas Thakur how to help all the living entities in this world. And so this is the preoccupation of those who are devotees. They're paradukha dukhi. It means that they are preoccupied with alleviating the suffering of others. They don't care about their own suffering. They care about the suffering of others. That's a good position to be in. So ask that question. And the answer always is to introduce Krishna. And he rectifies the world and helps people. Haridas Thakur mentioned how chanting of the holy name liberates living entities who are moving and non-moving. The chanting of the holy name can be appreciated even by the trees. And the living entities that are flying in the sky, little bugs and things like that. I mean, I live in a little room. I don't kill spiders because I don't mind spiders. I actually kind of like them. And a lot of them hang out in my room where I live. And they hear a lot of stuff. uh, And I was thinking, like, you know, you're here in Bhagavatam for a lot of hours up there, buddy. Like, what? You're a special spider. They're getting the benefit of that vibration. The soul can hear that and become benefited by that. And we can't always see the exact ways that Krishna's working right away. Overall, when, for instance, we're doing mass distribution of books, I mean, if we test the pot of rice and we pull out a few grains and, you know, we say, ask somebody how their life has changed. Like Banu, the other day, he got initiated, you know. Giriraj Maharaj had him wait for 5.5 years or something like that because he's so methodical. And, you know, Banu got a book in the St. Louis airport. Someone called him over. It was Chakri. He said, oh, excuse me, pious Hindu. That was his line. Oh, pious Hindu. He called him over like that, and he said, here's the Bhagavad Gita. So he bought the Bhagavad Gita. Next thing you know, now he's one case of someone now, you know, his whole family's Krishna conscious. And not only that, engaged in devotional service according to the, you know, the rules of the Sampradaya and stuff like that. That's a progressive life. How many millions of books are being distributed? We can't exactly see, you know, the overall effect that it's having. And to one degree or another, people are being affected. They'll get it. They'll read one word, one line. Satyadev Prabhu sent me something, a picture that his son had sent him. It was a picture of some, it was a graffito written on the back of a chair at some restaurant in Half Moon Bay. And it was a verse from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Some student or something was sitting there reading the book, and it said, for one who has controlled the mind is the best of friends, etc. And he said, look, here's what people are writing on the backs of chairs nowadays. So Krishna has when it leaks out into the world in that way, you know, sometimes we can't see it right away, and people like other kinds of philanthropy better. You know, if you build a hospital, you feel much better about yourself. You know, it's like, look, we're helping people. It's a much higher kind of philanthropy to distribute spiritual knowledge, because you affect people on such a basic level spiritually, it becomes indelible, and then they come to knowledge and they're able to help themselves and then help millions of others actually when they do. That damage has been done. Prabhupada said it. When we were being attacked. And if you do take to spiritual life and you do take a stand, you'll be attacked. Just take it right now. That's the way it is. People come after you on Facebook and every other place that you can imagine. if you decide that this is the way I'm going, I'm going to take a stand. I'm following the authority. It's like, who said they're the authority? We're the authority over here. Everyone wants to be the authority, right? So you're gonna be shot at. You're gonna be thrown, all kinds of things. So, but when you do that and you actually take a stand, you'll be challenged. But you can then propagate that to the world in such a way that people will get the greatest benefit. And I was gonna say that Prabhupada was under attack. There was a whole line of thinking that devotees obviously were brainwashed, because otherwise, why would they give up living in America in the 1980s, which looked pretty promising? You know, all you had to do was get an MBA and then you were set. And, you know, why would you give up everything and go and chant Hare Krishna and live in an ashram? You must be brainwashed. And so there was this whole anti-cult movement that started in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, and they were really attacking us in a lot of ways, even in court and all kinds of things, and kidnapping devotees and trying to quote-unquote deprogram them and so on and so forth. So early on that happened, even in Prabhupada's time, and there was an attack going on, and Prabhupada said that he said, it's too late. The damage has already been done. The brainwashed books are already out. In other words, we had distributed so many books by that time. He said, they're already out there. The damage has been done. He said, you can bring big, big fire brigade, but the fire will act nonetheless. You know, only a few books leaked into Russia behind the Iron Curtain, and people devoured them. And tracing back how that happened might be a difficult task, but we see it, the effect in the world today. How is it there's kirtan going on everywhere? Vietnam, I went to Vietnam on the bus, there was a picture of a kirtan. Come to the yoga class and they're having kirtan. Vietnam and China and Russia and, Cupertino.
Cambodia,
everywhere in the world, or Cupertino too. Everyone's, there's a gradual rise in spiritual life. Rameshwar asked Prabhupada about how we'll see the effect of all this book distribution. He said, will everyone come forward and live in a temple? And Prabhupada said, no, not like that. He said, you'll see a general rise in spirituality around the world. I was looking at an old copy of the Easy Journey to Other Planets, an old classic copy, and it said on the top of it, over 2.5 million copies in print. And just, if you read that one book, there's so much in there about how to, if you're actually serious about spiritual life, you can take shelter of that book and make advancement. So my point is that you're having a vast effect on the world by the propagation of spiritual knowledge. And we see it even with mundane movements like the communists and others, by expertly propagandizing and distributing their literature, Prabhupada said, they were able to effect change in the world. Fidel Castro, he was in jail, but he wrote down his little manifesto in lime juice on some papers because it was invisible until he exposed it to the sun, and he smuggled it out with his wife, who then had it printed and passed out to the people in society. And when he got out of jail, he was a hero. And he, by his ideology, by the printed word, pen is mightier than the sword. That's from a poem. The pen is mightier than the sword. He was able to invoke a revolution. American Revolution also started with a pamphlet.
The title of his book was History Will Absolve Me.
History Will Absolve
Me. Historia may absolve you. After the assault on the barracks, he was in prison and then came back. In the 50s, he assaulted the barracks and then in 1961.
Anyway. Rakshit?
Yes, I was just to make a comment with respect to the message of the purport, where it talks about this having the need to have a wise king as a ruler, that in the government system that we have currently, because of the separation of church and state, a wise man, if you will, shies away from, as such, overtly preaching religion or bringing principles of religion in order to deal with the subjects. That in those times it was applicable that there was a devotee king and who put everything in practice and ruled. But today, because of this formal separation of church and state, a leader who is out there is not overtly going to preach religion in a formal way. Although the message is still that what is desired is an individual who is a devotee who would be a leader. That is the message that is giving. There is a subtlety here that even people as such would desire leaders to be having these qualities, but our formal laws and everything separates the church from the state.
I think that it's especially a product of Kali Yuga. Because even within spiritual institutions, there's this struggle going on. We see in the Gaudiya Math, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasized that there should be a governing body commission to rule over the society. He started a revolution in spiritual life in India, no doubt about it. It was the Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha, which later became called the Gaudiya Math. And that was, he institutionalized basically the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so they could be spread everywhere. And they went door to door, they went town to town, then they preached vigorously. And they brought up the consciousness of the people, and they redignified Vaishnavism, which had been stolen this way and that way. Then Before he left, he wanted a commission. He didn't want somebody to be appointed as an acharya. He wanted the devotees to cooperate amongst themselves. Of course, initiations, things like that would go on. There would be gurus, but he wanted an overarching group that would work together cooperatively to govern the society so that it could spread all over the world. Now, what happened? After he left, they factionalized, and both factions put forward their own acharya and said, he's the acharya. No, he's the acharya. Then they fought practically to the death through the court. Even they sold the printing press that was the emblem of, the great expansion of Vaishnavism, one of the emblems, just to pay the court bills to fight over who was the acharya. And so these things can go on even in a religious society. We have our ISKCON society. Now, Prabhupada, seeing all this, he really pushed from the very beginning. He got a running start and said, GBC, GBC. And even he would, say, people would ask questions and he'd talk to the GBC. He instituted this kind of idea that we needed sort of a democratic way, an executive branch, and, we had to have a way that we could cooperatively organize a society. And still, there's a tendency, so jivas are individual, they have their own ways, and we can see many different ways that people go. So, there's always a struggle. And even in the times of these great Rajarishis, we can see it that there are many forces at play. When a king wanted to do a Rajasuya Yajna, he had to send out a challenge horse all across the country and say, we're going to do this Yajna. If you disagree, fight to the death. Otherwise, just accept it that I'm in charge. And they'd have to do that regularly to go around, because that's the nature of the world. Everyone starts going off in different directions. So you have to keep bringing things back to the center. So we can see that ISKCON now is holding together well in many ways because Prabhupada emphasized so much the need for strong rulership, but he did it in such a way that it was a cooperative. There's a GBC body that is overseeing things and not a king. He didn't put a king in charge. He didn't name one acharya and say, this person's definitely in charge. So your point's well taken, and there's always going to be a adjustment and struggle that goes on to come back to that center. Akurinath Prabhu.
I was thinking about some of the ways that historically, for example, there was slavery in the United States, and even the abolitionist party, like Abraham Lincoln, became elected president, but his philosophy wasn't to abolish slavery in the states where they had it, because it wouldn't have, he thought it wasn't practical, that it wouldn't work out that way. But to speak about what was wrong about it and to prevent it from spreading further into other states in the Union. But eventually, as it worked out, there became a war, and there was enough concern about it that as a war measure, actually, it was abolished. But I'm thinking about, for example, prohibition of liquor. There was a temperance movement, which was also associated with the movement for votes for women, because they thought that women, being the bastions of morality in the family and things like that, would be more opposed to the demon rum and the problems of drinking but it didn't quite work out that they had created a law in the United States, a prohibition of alcohol, it didn't really take. I guess there was too much popular desire to drink alcohol, and it became almost it even gave it a special cachet that it was against the law. But I'm thinking like that, how could we, a politician could try to, or whether a politician or what we're doing as Sankirtan devotees, try to get across this philosophy that as long as there's intoxication, gambling, meat eating, illicit sex, there's going to be these problems of quarrel that are going on in society, and that I don't think someone could be elected president or even senator or anything promising to close all the slaughterhouses and abolish meat eating and make it illegal to eat meat, or there would have to be some concession. But someone could popularize the idea of vegetarianism, and eventually, a groundswell of people in favor of vegetarianism would make other people want to sort of join the bandwagon. The way people are led, people could become. We've seen that vegetarianism. When you and I joined the Hare Krishna movement in the United States, vegetarianism was seen as like this real weird lunatic fringe, radical thing. And our parents were thinking, how can you follow that? You're going to get sick.
Die.
Yeah, you're going to get sick and die. But now it's, the TV doctors and everything are all supporting vegetarianism and it's being recommended. And there are signs in my doctor's office about the benefits of practicing yoga to reduce stress and things like that. The society is changing. And then through those cultural changes, they may eventually be able to accept political changes.
Yeah. Education is really important. That's why we emphasize it. It's shown that when there are a lot of the money that's used taxing cigarettes is used for educating people that cigarettes cause cancer, it reduces the number of people smoking. When they actually come to get some kind of knowledge about it, they stop. That's why tobacco companies went off into other countries where there's no regulation, and they got their market share back, and lots of people smoke in these other countries where it's not a campaign, where there's not a campaign against it. And there are always, as we were saying, the forces trying to exploit people. And, saintly people have to protect them. And one of the best ways is to educate people, definitely, because when they come to knowledge, then they can help themselves. So we do emphasize education, that we should distribute transcendental knowledge so that people can help themselves. And the ISKCON centers are meant to be a place for people to come and then gradually raise themselves to a higher platform, because you need help. You have to have association, like with AA. Of course, I heard recently that there's only a 5% success rate. I don't know if that's true or not. But in any case, that you have to have association kind of endeavor in order to move up. So that's what we're here for. So we're distributing to the masses. We're inviting everyone to come in and say, well, here's a system that you can follow and actually elevate yourself. I remember in Chicago when Prabhupada came there in 1975, there was an article in the paper, Crime, Why and What to Do. And Prabhupada met with the police chief in Chicago, and he said, we know what to do. He said, you have the government give us some of these buildings. And he said, we'll have prasadam and kirtan, and you'll see. We'll actually bring people out of this. We'll stem the crime wave. We'll bring it down by this educational system. Even in prisons, it's shown, in the prisons that are more progressive, where they actually educate the prisoners so that they have a vocation, so that they know why it's bad to commit crimes and things like that, and they reform them, rather than just punish them, that they come out in a much better way. But generally, they don't do that in prisons. They just throw them in there with bad association. They come out worse than they were before.
It seems another symptom of Kali Yuga is that the idea of religion becomes so quarrelsome about my authority is right, no, my authority is right, that it just becomes a matter of which label, which religion you belong to. And then politicians who try to get the vote, like with the so-called religious right or whatever, that I'm supporting morality, I'm against abortion, I'm against intoxication and illicit sex and homosexuality and things like that, they often are perceived as just, and probably correctly perceived as just, you know, being partisans of one religious camp or church, like Christianity. The conception of Christianity being that it must be against Judaism, it must be against Islam and stuff like that. Whereas if there could be an increasing awakening sense that there is a, you know, like what Srila Prabhupada would say, science of God, science of spirituality, that's not a matter of just a fashion or joining a particular faction or team. If that could grow, for example, there was an article in Newsweek in 2009. The lady wrote that America is becoming Hindu. We're all Hindus now, but when you read the article, she wasn't saying that people were practicing, you know, worshiping in Hindu temples, you know, studying the Vedas or chanting Sanskrit. But she was saying Americans are starting to much more, but based on polls, based on surveys, they're much more accepting the idea, which she identified as a Hindu idea, that, you know, whatever you do that helps bring you to spiritual perfection, if it works, it's good. And it's not simply a matter of going to a particular church. You know, like when my wife was raised as a Catholic, and when she was young, it was an idea that if you set foot in a Lutheran church or a Methodist church, you had committed a sin, you know, because we were Catholics and you can't go to their church, which is a very different idea from this idea that, you know, that, no, there is something beneficial about sense control, about morality, about study of you know, understanding the soul and understanding what is God and what is nature and so forth, and it doesn't have to be a matter of you know, just quarreling about, you know, whose organization or authority is right, but really getting the result, the effective result of love of God. Which is taught in all religions. You know, Jesus taught that by the fruits you know them, and it's taught in all religions that there's an actual result. You know, we want to become free from birth and death. We want to be able to deal with each other properly and justly. We want to achieve these ends, and however you can achieve those ends, so maybe politicians will eventually be able to hit those notes. You know, of you know, finding the way to attract people to cleaner living, higher living, and maybe chanting Hare Krishna is the way that will help everyone do that.
Oh, it's definitely a way. It's kalo nasteva 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 gatir anyata. Definitely the way. Definitely way. Definitely the only way. Yeah, this non-sectarian presentation is there, if we read carefully, within Prabhupada's preface of the Bhagavatam and, you know, throughout the presentation. In any discipline, there's a spectrum of practitioners, beginning with the neophytes and then going to those who have their own realization and they have their strong faith, therefore they're more flexible. Neophytes generally tend to argue among themselves. Prabhupada mentions this in the Srisha Upanishad. The neophyte class argue among themselves. Part of the reason is they're inflexible because their faith is so weak that they're insecure. And they're afraid to entertain anybody else's idea because if I hear it like this, if I even discuss it, the boogeyman's going to get me. and I'm going to be finished. I'll give up my faith, and I'll go to hell, and so on, right? You meet somebody, say, have a look at this, and so when people actually become spiritually advanced, according to the system of Sanatan Dharma, and the real effulgence of the soul comes out, people do become more reasonable. There's no replacement for maturity, and so we advocate that. We want people to become mature spiritually, and Prabhupada advocated, he said he wanted independent, thoughtful, a mature spiritual people. You know, if you have a whole bunch of people who are insecure and who don't know the philosophy very well and they band together, so what, they make a big organization, eventually it's going to not be that effective. Whereas if you have even a small group or even one person who's very mature spiritually, then you'll have an effect on the world. So we really advocate what you're talking about, which is spiritual advancement.
I was just to add with respect to both your comments that what it really calls for, emphasizes at the educational level, is the non-sectarian aspect for one thing, but at the same time, to be able to convey some universal principles that are there, that we all, if you will, resonate with. For example, even today, when you discussed the purport, I could see that there were quite a few delineating basic principles that have a scientific basis about how, when one takes up this path, one will advance and ultimately find bliss. It's a process. And that doesn't necessarily connect one to some religion. Of course, we have Krishna as the Supreme Personality. But preaching that aspect of what that method is or what the process is, what it leads to, and pointing that out, educating people in it, with from the start to the finish, what it would lead to and the type of society it will create, would bring people into this and would serve the goal without it being officially coming from government as a line or it being part of some major religion which is winning over other religion because it happens to be having more people in a particular country that people have to follow. So the point I was essentially making is an educational emphasis with a non-sectarian approach that emphasizes basic universal scientific principles can bring the Shastra also, can communicate the Shastra and bring people into the fore.
Do it.
Sure. In fact, and I would like to add, yes, it is being done wherever I have an opportunity. But I'll also like to add that Srila Prabhupada even used to mention that people in their own professions should try to articulate this knowledge in their language with their colleagues and others to communicate this.
Yeah, and especially those who are among our society, like yourself and others who have all these assets and also understand the Krishna conscious philosophy. The whole, our mission here is to have everyone go out and in your own circle, whether it's a scientific circle, whether it's the workplace, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whatever it is, if you're a writer, to use that in order to bring up the consciousness of the world. This is what we're meant to do. And, you know, use your talents. You're traveling all over the world anyway, you know, and doing these things, right? I know I had a business for a while in my home, and I just remember one day when I was on the phone convincing somebody to buy something because, you know, it was part of the overhead. I just thought, this whole feeling came over my whole body, and I thought, I'm not going to use one more breath. Not one more. Convincing somebody to buy something that's not Krishna. Mm-hmm. You know, because they were arguing with me. And I was like, no, it's like this. And it's like, what a waste of time. Even if I even if I sell them the product, if they buy it, I still, there's no real win in this, you know. They bought the product, I make a profit. So like, no more. Preaching's our business. Preaching's our main business. And if you use your, whatever slot you're in, because of, you know, your momentum from your previous life, you can use that to spread Krishna consciousness. That's what we want. That's what we want. It's an international society for Krishna consciousness. People from all over the world spreading Krishna consciousness together. That's the Sankirtan movement. So that's what we're doing here. So go for it, Rakshit. Make us proud. We already are, but, you know, we want to see you in lights.
Thank you so much for a nice class with you about Raj Rishi, that even if we don't have like political leader, we can still be ourselves within the body. We can control mind and senses. I was just thinking about, like, there are many examples in scriptures about Raj Rishis, like Parikshit Maharaj. I was reading King Manadhatta, who was also having like all seven Deepas, and he ruled the whole planet, and Yudhishthira Maharaj. And there are examples of like Priyavarta, who like initially was very fixed up in Krishna consciousness, but later on while ruling the kingdom, I think he was got a little bit distracted, and then he was reminded. Like that, we have example of King Kulshekara, who actually wanted to give up the kingdom and just be in Srirangam and fully focus on the core Krishna consciousness. So as a leader, how we can balance the management versus like the core Krishna consciousness principles, and there's always a like getting into this side or that side. So if you can give some...
Well, management and your spiritual life, you have to have a strong sense of mission. Because management grows unlimitedly, and you can become consumed just with managing, and you have to keep coming back to the principle. So the way Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati managed and the way Prabhupada carried it forward, you can see how he was bringing the same idea, was that preach vigorously. The management will follow like a shadow. That's what he said, actually. When you preach, then management follows like a shadow. And he also said, money follows too. Don't worry, like preaching is our business. And don't worry about making money separately. There've been a lot of problems with that. So have a strong sense of mission and keep coming back to it. And if you're managing, you have to keep reiterating the mission over and over again for whoever you're managing. Like if you're in a family and you're managing, you have wife and two kids or whatever, it's like, why are we doing this anyway? Because after a while, you know, you all get busy and you start thinking like, you know, I got my job, you've got to, and you know, you forget, why are we doing this? Why did we have kids in the first place? Why are we working so hard to make money? Come back and decide, you know, why are we doing this? If you have a church or you have an organization, you have to have that mission on the back of your hand. You have to have it on a wristband. On a wristband, and you have to wear it around, and it should be yellow, and you should walk around and say, like, here's what we're doing, you know? What are you doing? This. Has to be that clear all the time, reiterating the mission, because then management falls into place. Otherwise, management just gets to be busy. It's just busy, busy all the time, but you remember your mission. And it takes some balance sometimes. You know, Prabhupada had orders from his spiritual master, and how he managed to carry those out is a long saga. You know, it's all about how he went through his life and he found his way through, you know, Krishna showed him the way, but he had to look for it, right? I mean, to take sannyas, which was a big deal, which meant, you know, preaching, world preaching and all kinds of things. He went and asked different god brothers, should I do it? His spiritual master was calling him in dreams and Prabhupada said, I was horrified. You know, change is difficult. Nobody likes it. And, you know, giving up one position in life and moving to the next, this is management. You know, how to move from here to there, you have to manage. So do it with a lot of guidance and do it with a very strong sense of mission in mind. Because then you can always come back and check with the mission. Did it work? And if you don't have a mission, it doesn't matter what you do. Because if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. You just do whatever you like and it can grow out of control. That's one of the things that happens in corporations and things is mission creep. And after a while, you're doing a million things and you're not sure if they're working or not because you have no way to check. Like, what's the program for? How is there a measurable result? Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Vrijendra Kumar, we don't want to leave you out. This is the last thing.
Roji, like you said, you know, your experience while selling the product, you know, doing that business. So similarly, devotees and, you know, some like myself also, I also feel that why I'm doing this work, you know, material work. Because it's really not connected to Krishna and they are using it for exploitation of Mother Earth and, you know, and just increasing more and more sense gratification. So this feeling always comes. So how to, but I cannot immediately get out of it because I have been trained into this education, material education, and, you know, that is my source of living. Mm-hmm. So cannot be immediately getting out of it. But then how should we plan or what is the recommended thing, you know, to be focused over there and to be at the same time plan that one day one will be actually fully into the service of the in the movement.
Nice question. You should take that feeling and put it in, you know, a bottle. It's very valuable, that feeling, and keep it. It's powerful, powerful substance. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami had it. They had a look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they say, that's it. We're out of all this wealth and aristocracy. We're going to leave and we're going to follow this path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It wasn't like they're thinking, maybe I will, maybe I won't. They were, when one realizes that there's no stability in this world, actually even my parents and everybody else is just, they're an acquaintance. I'm just passing through. And then I realized that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the actual substance, so on and so forth. Like they're finding this in themselves. But they're still in the government. How can they get out? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote them a letter. And he said, he gave them the example of the paramour. You know, paramour is, a secret lover. So he said that a housewife, she has a paramour, a secret lover somewhere. But, you know, she can't just dump everything and run off. It would be a scandal. But she does her housework very carefully, and so nobody detects her, what she's actually thinking and how she's feeling, but she keeps that within her heart, that that's actually where I'm going. And so in the same way, our real lover is Krishna, and our real love in life is devotional service. But we're trapped in to some situation, whatever it is. So you should keep that feeling in your heart and go on doing your duty. But whenever you find an opportunity, whenever you see a little gap for change, these are the VLCs, the voluntary life changes, you take it. This is surrender. You take it when you can, when Krishna gives you an opening, because he's the one who gives the openings, actually. Raghunath Das Goswami, same thing. He was in this rich family, and that was at a time in India, and it's still part of the culture, you know, the children belong to the parents, kind of like that, to some degree, right? Yeah. You belong, you're a property, you know, you work, and then you take care of me later on, something like that. Back then, it was really like that, and Raghunath Das Goswami was basically under house arrest. He couldn't leave. He was the property of the parents, and where do you think you're going? And they'd have 10 men come bring him back. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't act like a crazy person. You know, stay in your situation, act like a perfect gentleman. When you get the opportunity, then you go. How did he get the opportunity? He went to Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda put his lotus feet on his head, and he said, don't worry, you're going to be free. And then he got the opportunity. When he saw it, he knew it, he ran, he bolted. And then he went and he joined the Vaishnavas. His parents sent 10 men every direction, too late. By the time they found him, they thought that he was with Shivananda Sen and all the devotees going into Navadvipa, but he was already there with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was already a renunciate. He had already been put under the care of Swarup Damodar. Too late. And they sent back message that he's one of the most highly respected Vaishnavas following, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking shelter of his lotus feet. You'll get your shot, but you know, part of it's a test, because Krishna wants to see how much you want it. And it doesn't matter where you live or what situation you're in now. Everyone comes from that situation one way or the other. It's how much you cultivate inwardly that desire. If it's intense enough, Krishna can pull you out. You should pray for it. You know, like before you chant your japa or your Gayatri mantras, you could ask for something. You know, I like to ask for, please send me the most advanced association. And I say, Krishna, if you send me the most advanced association, I'll take advantage of every second. Whatever it is, I'll be there. Because just by that, but ask for something. Ask for a boon for Krishna to help you from your situation, whatever it is in now. And you pray over and over like that, amazing things will happen. He can open up the whole world. You know, he saw what was in Bali Maharaj's heart. Even though he was a demon, he was trapped inside that yajna. He couldn't offer obeisances even to Arukram when he came, but he held it in his heart. So Bhavagrahi Janardhan, keep that bhav stoked in your heart, and it'll eventually burst forth. when Krishna gives you the opportunity. Okay? Go pray, Manandayaribo!